From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the story of Audie Murphy, the most decorated American soldier in World War II, his time in Hollywood, and his personal struggle with what we call today post-traumatic stress disorder.
Long about 2 in the morning, that McFadden is awakened by this awful racket, and he opens his eyes to see Audie Murphy punching the wall in the throes of one of these terrible nightmares.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The son of sharecroppers, Audie Murphy learned to shoot and how to fight while growing up rough and poor in Texas. He would become America's most decorated combat veteran during World War II and then a box office Hollywood superstar. But today, Audie Murphy is no longer a household name. David A. Smith would like to change that. He's a senior lecturer in American history at Baylor University, and he wrote the book, The Price of Valor, The Life of Audie Murphy, America's Most Decorated Hero of World War II.
Hi, David. It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
How well remembered is Audie Murphy today? Outside of the people who study military history, is he still the pop figure that he was?
He really isn't. He's not nearly as well known as he used to be. I teach history at Baylor University, and I was teaching a couple of survey classes, and I asked each of them, about 35 students in each, I said, how many of you know the name Audie Murphy? And just one or two in each class, you know, raised his hand, her hand, and said, I think I know the name. And they, one person said, he was a soldier from World War II, right? And another person said he was a actor and he made westerns, right? So his memory is fading a lot more than I think it should be.
So hopefully this book will remind people of the hero that he was. First, let's start off with his childhood. He is a native Texan.
He is, yeah. He grew up in Hunt County up northeast of Dallas, and he was born in 1925, which was the roaring 20s in a lot of America, but in rural Texas, there wasn't much jazz age going on at all.
And he grew up very poor.
He did. He was in a tenant farming family, and they followed the cotton crop. And the cotton was a rough crop to be, you know, to be involved with in the late 20s because the price fell every year, and it was harder and harder to get a job as a tenant farmer on a cotton farm. And they wandered through Hunt County from farm to farm throughout his childhood. His father disappeared by the time he was about 14 or so. And then his mother died in the summer of 41.
And that hit him hard.
It hit him very hard. He and his mother were very, very close. I mean, one of his earliest memories is of rubbing his mother's hands after she picked cotton all day. They were really close, and her death hit him very hard.
And then he became, was he the main breadwinner for the siblings?
He was. A lot of his siblings had left home already, but a lot of them hadn't. He was from a very big family.
And
he
big had, brood.
Oh, a big brood. He had some older siblings and some younger siblings. He left home for good, but he sent money back to his mother and to his little siblings while she was alive. She lived with his older sister for a while. But after his mother died, he and his older sister agreed to put his three youngest siblings in an orphanage. And that upset him a great deal, and he vowed that he would get them out someday.
According to the legend of Audie Murphy, he honed his shooting skills, putting meat on the table.
Absolutely. He said, if I missed, we didn't eat. And he had a very strong sense of responsibility. This is something you see carry into the war years, too.
And that was something, of course, that paid dividends when he was in the armed services. So how did he become sign up? How did he become a part of the military?
Well, you know, he was swept up in the enthusiasm after the Pearl Harbor attack in December of 41. And he tried to enlist early in 42, but he was too small, literally too small. He was underweight and he was under height. He tried to enlist in the Marines. He tried to enlist in the paratroopers. And they told him basically, you know, thanks, but no thanks. And then finally, he lied about his age and enlisted in the Army infantry in June of 42.
So he signed up when he was 17.
Right. Mm-hmm. He had just turned 17.
And so when he enlisted and was able to start training, he even passed out while during training.
Yeah, he always had a susceptibility to get sick. I noticed that. That's something I learned about him. And during his training that summer of 42, I mean, they were out west of Fort Worth. It was blisteringly hot. He had just had a series of immunizations, and he was out on the range doing a pack hike, and he just keeled over.
Now, but he was also known for having a bad temper, and he was a scrapper.
He was a scrapper. I remember his elementary school teachers remembered, you know, him getting in fights when he was little. And he said, well, how did he put it in his memoir? He said, I guess I was trying to level with my fists that which I thought life had put above me. Yeah, he had a temper. And he was proud, too. And those things feed off of each other.
And when he was in the unit, they called him Babyface.
That baby and Babyface. And you can imagine how well that went over. And usually they only called him that once.
So I had read once that he was kind of considered to be the mascot of the unit because he was so small and so young.
Yeah, that's true. But when you get to know him, when you see what kind of fighter he is, it's hard to sort of diminish him to mascot status when he becomes well known for his valor throughout the entire 3rd Division. By the end of the war, people in his bigger units were saying that if we knew Audie Murphy was on the front lines, the men in the rear could go to sleep.
How soon after he was shipped over to, I guess it was North Africa, did he begin to establish his credentials?
He didn't see any fighting in North Africa. The North African campaign was largely over by the time he really got there. He took part in the invasion of Sicily, which began in the summer of 43, and he fought his way through Sicily. And it was in Sicily that people first noticed what a good shot he was. And it was in Sicily when he really starts showing that he's a tough soldier and not a reckless soldier, but certainly a brave one, volunteering for dangerous missions, volunteering for scouting out between the lines. And he sees some rough fighting.
So tell me more about that fighting.
Well, it's fighting in the mountains of Italy was really, really tough, slogging up and down muddy, muddy, rocky mountains, crossing rivers in the face of German fire. I mean, the Germans had drawn up successive defensive lines, sort of moving south to north in Italy, and the 3rd Division was right in the teeth of that over and over again, and he never shied away from it. And he just repeatedly volunteered for the most outrageously dangerous missions. That's how his legend began to build.
Now, he earned 3 Purple Hearts.
He was wounded, gosh, more times than you can really keep track of. And he actually was wounded more than the Purple Hearts that he got. There was one time he was wounded by a mortar, and it was right in the middle of a bigger operation that led to his Medal of Honor. And he didn't report that at all. It cut up his leg pretty badly. So he could probably have been eligible for more.
Everyone who knows Audie Murphy knows about the burning tank.
Uh-huh,
and
sure.
That's the big scene, the climactic scene that we saw in the movie that was based on mm-hmm. his life story to hell and back. So talk about the set that up.
So what was happening is that's when the Americans were closing in on the German frontier. It was in January of 45. He and his unit, they were drawn up at the northern edge of a field. They had forests to their back. And out in front of them, a little ways away, was a little village called Holzwehr. And the Germans came out of that. A whole company came out with tanks in support.
Fire tanks that I can see in what looks like 2 reinforced rifle companies.
And the tanks began to pushed the Americans back. He lost the 2 tanks that he had at his side, and he ordered his men to fall back.
What about you?
I'm going to stay here and see if I can get some artillery working.
And as he was falling back in the face of this German advance, he had no idea that he was going to do this. He saw a 50 caliber machine gun mounted on the top of one of these tanks, and he jumped up there, and his reasoning was, I can hold the Germans off a little bit longer, and I can buy more time for my men to get out. And he stood up there on this burning tank, plowing the ammo from this 50 caliber machine gun into these advancing Germans, and there was so much smoke around the burning tank, they couldn't tell where it was coming from.
He's got more guts and sense. That tank is loaded with gas and ammo. It'll blow up any minute.
And he pivoted to the left and to the right. All the while, this tank was burning under his feet.
Murph! Get out of there! Murph!
And, of course, he made a joke later. He said that was the first time his feet had been warm in 3 months.
And so he was on top of that tank for an hour doing this.
He was on top of that tank for a long time. I don't know how many minutes exactly went by, but it was not a brief thing. It was an extended period of
time. And it had the potential to explode at any instant.
At any instant. I mean, Hollywood couldn't have done it any better. I mean, and after the Germans fell back, and he sort of collapsed in exhaustion off the tank, and he started walking back toward the rest of his men, and then the tank blew up and blew the turret way off into the woods. And of course, I mean, if he had been standing on it when it blew, it would have blown him to pieces.
We're talking about the life, heroism, and the memory of Audie Murphy. David A. Smith is the author of The Price of Valor.
I started to think about home for a change, which we didn't dare think of before, because, as you know, you live from day to day, minute to minute in most cases. And suddenly I was a little frightened. Strange as it might seem, I didn't know what I'd do when I got home. And I suddenly felt just a little empty inside and a little lonely about the whole thing. Although I was very happy the war was over, I suddenly didn't feel that I had a home.
That is the voice of Audie Murphy, the most decorated soldier during World War II. He is the subject of a book by David A. Smith, The Price of Valor. Many people in San Antonio may be familiar with the name of Audie Murphy. We have a VA hospital named after him. Let me ask you, Professor Smith, about what Audie is talking about there. He's talking about at the end of the war, the tough adjustments that have to be made.
Sure. You know, he came home to discover to his shock that he was a hero. And San Antonio was the place where he discovered this. They had a huge parade for all these officers and men who had come home from the airport all the way downtown. And a lot of people were there to see him because he was famous when he got home without realizing it. He couldn't believe that all those people were there to see him. He said he was shocked that everybody seemed to know his name. But it was. There was an emptiness to it in the midst of all this adulation and, you know, the flowers raining down on top of his open car from buildings in downtown San Antonio. There was this emptiness there that stayed with him for the rest of his life.
He became a motion picture star in Hollywood, and we'll talk about that.
A Texican. Mexican boots and a Texan hat, guns slung low with a trigger tied back. These are the marks of a fighting man, the kind they call the Texican.
Well, you're worth 500 in gold for anyone who takes you in.
You can come along peaceful, or we can do it the other way.
Who is the trigger man they call the Texican? He's double trouble, a man of quiet courage, driven by desperation, driven to violence, who always has the last word when his guns do the talking. Starring Audie Murphy as Jess Carlin, the man they call the Texican. Across the border he comes with a price on his head and sudden death in his gun belt to hunt down the man who killed his brother.
Audie Murphy made more than 40 feature films, and almost all of them were Westerns. They didn't provide many opportunities for Audie Murphy to stretch as an actor, but his starring role in the 1951 film version of The Red Badge of Courage has been called Audie Murphy's strongest film performance. The movie adaptation of the Stephen Crane classic about the Civil War was directed by Hollywood legend John Huston. The movie was a box office bomb, but today it's considered a Hollywood essential and highly regarded for its graphic and unromantic depiction of war, but also it's worth viewing for Audie Murphy's strong performance as the youth.
Not since Gone with the Wind has a motion picture presented with such force and fire an historic incident in the war between the states. The Red Badge of Courage is an essay in pure bravery. The story of a raw young recruit who overnight becomes a man through a baptism of fire. This is a motion picture about people, great people, blood brothers, their lives, their dreams.
Wished I had my dog along. First time I ever went hunting without my old dog.
The red badge of courage digs deeply into the heart of humanity as it reflects the warmth and humor, the fears and brave deeds of fighting men, such as the boy played by Audie Murphy.
Jim?
Yeah?
How do you think the regiment will do?
Oh, they'll fight all right once they get into it.
We'll be on them like wildcats. They won't know what hit them.
Think any of the boys will run?
There may be a few of them run, but there's them kind in every regiment. Especially when they first goes under fire.
Yesterday, when things started getting hot, I was mighty scared.
We all was.
Yeah. But I lit out.
You mean you ran away, Henry?
But his personality on screen, I'm sure, wasn't that different than his actual personality. He's very affable, very friendly, but there's a sadness there also.
He's very reserved. He's very quiet. He's good if the roles that he plays, in a movie, if they line up with his personality, he can be pretty good as an actor. But if it calls for him to do something that's unnatural, he's not very good at it. But yeah, he was a quiet and a sad guy.
He was on the cover of Life magazine, and through that image, he was called to Hollywood. Can you talk about his career out there?
Sure. You know, about Life magazine, I think about this quite a bit. I don't know if we have anything in contemporary culture that has the resonance of Life magazine in the 1940s. I really don't think we do. And him being on the cover of that was the biggest single moment of his life other than winning the Medal of Honor. And it came to the attention of Jimmy Cagney. Jimmy Cagney, you know, the well-known actor, he was trying to get his own production company off the ground, and he was not having a very good luck at it. And he had made a couple of movies that had flopped. And then he saw Audie Murphy on the cover of Life, and he thumbed through it, and he looked at the pictures, and he said something along the lines of, "This kid photographs well from every angle. We can do something with him." And, you know, and he's a star, he's a celebrity, he's a hero. And it was Jimmy Cagney who brings him out to Hollywood to sort of get a look at what Hollywood's like and for Hollywood to get a look at Audie Murphy.
So how did that go?
Well, it went pretty well. I mean, it went as well as could be expected, given how reticent and, gosh, and how damaged Audie Murphy was. I mean, he was already having trouble sleeping. He was already having horrible nightmares when he did go to sleep. He was already feeling this gnawing sense of guilt that survivors so often do. And he took acting lessons quite a bit, and it helped a little bit. And his career floundered for a while before it began to get some traction. And he was cast in some Westerns, and then he started getting a little more comfortable in front of the cameras.
So how did the public respond? Here they knew of Audie Murphy from Life magazine and from his battle accomplishments. Now he's on the silver screen. But then comes they make his autobiography into a film. That kind of weird.
It was very weird, and he was very uncomfortable with it.
To Hell and Back is the true story of the heartbreak, the humor, the guts and glory of every GI, as seen through the eyes of one of them. Audie Murphy, the kid who on the field of battle won every decoration for valor his country had to give, to become the most decorated soldier for combat action in the military history of the United States. It is the story of a Texas farm kid who at the age of 12 fought his first war against hunger.
Now, he was a pretty established actor by the time they made To Hell and Back. And he had published his memoir in 1949, and it was a huge hit. I mean, it really revivified his celebrity. And he knew that Hollywood making a movie of that was somewhere on the horizon. But he dreaded it. He didn't want him to make a movie out of it because he knew that Hollywood would put the focus on him And he didn't want the focus on him. He wanted the focus on the men who didn't come back, the men who really had sacrificed everything. And he dedicated his book to two of his friends who didn't come back from the war.
And as I understand it, Audie Murphy actually played down some of his accomplishments in the film because he thought that the audience wouldn't even believe it.
Right. That's exactly right. He didn't want to have the scene in which he won his Medal of Honor. He didn't want to have that scene atop the burning tank because he didn't want to be the center of things, and he didn't think people would believe it. He thought that people would say this is typical Hollywood exaggeration, and he resisted hard, but he lost that fight.
But he truly became a pop icon in the 40s and 50s. Here he is on a quiz show. What's My Line?
You have another claim to fame. Did you do something that attracted the nation's attention in that you were featured in newspaper stories at one point?
Yes, that's right.
Well, if you are a motion picture actor who was featured in newspaper stories, would it have been as a result of your performances in World War II?
Yes, that would be true, Dr. Miss Arlene.
Well,
Mr. Seraph?
Are you Audie Murphy?
Audie Murphy!
And that's an indication of how well-known Audie Murphy was then, but today, not so much. He's sort of, his name has faded from the pop culture. But David A. Smith, in your book, The Price of Valor, you read it and it's an incredible story. But I wonder about America's habit of creation of heroes, and I think about Sergeant York from World War I. Very similar type of story. A rural individual, a reluctant warrior, goes forth and becomes a great hero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Audie Murphy saw Sergeant York in October of 41.
The movie.
He liked Gary Cooper. Gary Cooper was one of his favorite actors. And he went to see Sergeant York in Greenville in October of 41 before the war started. And he loved it. He went to see it twice, in fact.
So, does America... Do we create these heroes? Do we go looking for a Sergeant York for World War II and we found Audie Murphy, or did he actually spring up complete and with insincerely?
I think it's the latter. I think that American culture wants heroes, but American culture very often gets heroes when they don't expect it. We're a very celebrity-driven culture, and I say that now, but honestly, we were a pretty celebrity-driven culture back in the 50s and 40s, too. And we're always sort of on the lookout for the person who's going to be the next big thing. But Audie Murphy's example shows that it doesn't always come from the direction we're expecting it. You know, this little diminutive, soft-spoken person, this becomes the hero of the country for World War II. It was not what people expected at all.
How many people knew that Audie Murphy was suffering from battle fatigue, or what we call today PTSD?
Those closest to him knew it. I don't think that the public knew it at all. His family obviously knew it. The people who traveled with him, there's a great story, a studio employee traveling with Audie Murphy on one of these press junkets all over the country that the actors used to do. And there's a mess up with the hotel rooms. And Audie doesn't get his own room one night, and he and this guy named Frank McFadden have to bunk down together. And that evening, Audie Murphy takes off his sport coat, and McFadden says, "That was the first time I realized that he always had a gun with him." And he takes the gun out of the holster, and he slips it under the pillow, and he sleeps with it under the pillow. And the story goes that long about 2 in the morning, that McFadden is awakened by this awful racket, and he opens his eyes to see Audie Murphy punching the wall in the throes of one of these terrible nightmares. And he gingerly wakes him up by calling his name. And Audie Murphy goes in the bathroom and washes his hands and simply says, "I had a nightmare," and he gets back in bed and goes back to sleep. And that's you had to be close to see it, but if you were close, you saw it abundantly.
So Audie Murphy is dealing with his PTSD, and he is self-medicating with sleeping pills, and they become addictive.
Yes, and he realizes he's addicted. This is later into the 1960s. He realizes he's addicted to these things and that they're influencing his behavior. They're getting in the way of him filming movies. It's typical of him that he doesn't look for help. He locks himself in a hotel room and quits cold turkey, as we would say.
So Audie Murphy is present in American culture through the 50s and 60s, and as we go through Korea and the start of Vietnam, and he becomes very outspoken about the treatment of veterans.
He does. He does. You know, he regards the Army as his second family. And anytime he says something bad about the Army, it's with a great deal of hesitation, and it hurts him to complain. And I don't think he was raised to be a complainer. But in 1962, I think it is, he gives an interview, and he says, you know, the Army did a better job of debriefing its dogs than it did its soldiers. Every once in a while, you'll see that he sort of knows what combat did to him, and he understands it, and he's a little bit upset with the Army for not taking better care of its veterans.
When he speaks, America can listen.
Yeah, when he speaks, America listens. But it's honestly, it's more his life story than anything that he speaks out openly. I mean, he doesn't get on a soapbox, and he doesn't go on a crusade, but just the example of his life and the way that the stories get out about how much he suffers. And, you know, he's bankrupt by the middle of the 60s, and it's because of his gambling addiction that is a direct consequence of his PTSD. It finally becomes sort of too much for people to ignore.
So when we talked earlier about how your students, your college students at Baylor, aren't really familiar with Audie Murphy, is it time for America to rediscover Audie Murphy?
Gosh, I really hope so. I really think it is, and I think we could benefit from it. You know, his career, his life, shows how different heroism and celebrity is. I mean, he was on a par with Rock Hudson and Elizabeth Taylor. And his story is rich enough and, I think, instructive enough that we would all benefit from knowing it a little bit better.
On May 28, 1971, Audie Murphy died in a plane crash in Virginia shortly before his 46th birthday. Murphy was buried with full military honors at Arlington National Cemetery. The headstones of Medal of Honor recipients are normally decorated in gold leaf. Murphy previously requested that his stone remain plain and inconspicuous like that of an ordinary soldier. Here's how CBS anchor Walter Cronkite reported Audie Murphy's death.
Good evening. America's most decorated soldier of World War II, Audie Murphy, used to refer modestly to himself as a fugitive from the law of averages. Now it appears the law of averages has caught up with Audie Murphy. On a wooded mountain near Roanoke, Virginia this afternoon, rescue workers found six bodies and no survivors in the remains of a private plane the 46-year-old Murphy and a group of businessmen had taken in a flight from Atlanta, Georgia last Friday. It had been believed there were only five men on the plane. There was no immediate explanation of the discrepancy. Murphy, who lived in North Hollywood, California, leaves a wife and two teenage sons.
David A. Smith is the author of the book The Price of Valor, The Life of Audie Murphy, America's Most Decorated Hero of World War II. David, thank you so much. And as I told you earlier, I've been waiting for a long time to do something on the air about Audie Murphy. Thank you.
I'm glad that you have, and I'm glad that I could oblige, because this is a story that I want more people to know.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You can also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. And that's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to, and you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.